All right, well, welcome to the music-inspired media podcast. I am your host, Shane Christopher Neal, right here on MusicLifeMagazine.net. Make sure you check out the website, MusicLifeMagazine.net. It hosts this podcast, Music-Inspired Media, every single week. We run a new podcast every Monday. Somebody, somewhere, somehow in the music business, it happens right here, Music-Inspired Media. Today, really interesting. I met this gentleman in Las Vegas, and he's a DJ. There's a lot of DJs in Las Vegas, but he was really unique, really a nice guy. And we connected when I was there, and we chatted about being a DJ. We talked about some of the biggest names that are DJs out in Las Vegas. His real name is Eric Long. He goes by DJ Scooby, and he's traveled all over the world. He became, I guess, he became a DJ at a fairly young age. And then he went to Clemson, where he became a soccer player and a marketer of sorts. And he decided to carry on his passion for DJing, and he would DJ a bunch of parties at Clemson. He would go down to Hilton Head Island in South Carolina and do that as well. He really honed his craft down in South Carolina. He decided to take the trip to Las Vegas and make it there, and he's done a great job. He DJs at some of the hottest clubs, some of the best bars, and some of the best corporate events in Las Vegas. His name is Eric Long. I mentioned he goes by DJ Scooby. Stick around. He's coming up next on the Music Inspired Media Podcast.
Welcome to the Shane Christopher Neal Podcast. Shane's a TV and radio personality, international event host, A&R label rep, co-founder of BS Live Rocks Entertainment Group, an all-around epic guy. This podcast is sponsored by Music Life Magazine. Check out all Shane's podcasts at MusicLifeMagazine.net. So much to talk about with so little time. Here's your host, Shane Christopher Neal.
All right, time for another edition of the Music Inspired Media Podcast. And I'm telling you right now, this podcast is number one in the world, according to me. It's about it. But anyway, a lot of people listen to this. We get a lot of great feedback. And one thing I like is that we dive into all different sectors within the music and media world. Like, we've talked to artists, we talked to managers, we talked to promoters, we talked to record labels. And today, and I wanted to say for the first time, we're going to talk to a DJ. But I guess the first time that happened was a few years ago when Deadmau5 was in Niagara Falls, being that he's from Niagara Falls, but it did not appear on Music Life Magazine, which this is on, so I guess this is kind of our first DJ. Welcome, Mr. Eric Long. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
I'm doing well. So let's set the scene here. I had no idea who the hell you were. You live in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I was at a networking conference for the Savvy Networking, and you were there as well. And you and I had a discussion, and we did a little interview for Sarah for her show. And in our chats, we were just talking about music and DJing, and I had a lot of questions for you then. So I thought, why don't I just call you one day, and I'll just ask him the same questions, and we'll just tape it this time. So that's how we got to where we're at right now.
All right.
So I want to go back in your life to set the scene, and you're called DJ Scooby. We're going to get to that in a moment, but talk about the beginning here and being at home and listening to 8-track tapes and how you really got a passion for music and DJing.
Well, yeah, it certainly gives away my age a little bit when you talk about the 8-track tapes. So my parents had they had an 8-track tape set up in their room. Dad had a TAC reel-to-reel. And that was my first experience with music, Shane. And so I go into their music or their into their room and I listen to some 8-tracks, and some of them were, I remember seeing 8-tracks of Queen and God, it was Van Halen.
I was going to say, you've got the Van Halen 1984, I think it's cassette cover on your website here.
You know, that was my very first cassette. That was my very first cassette. It was. I grabbed a hold of it, man. It just all genres. They had show tune. I mean, they had Saturday Night Fever soundtracks and Grease soundtracks and everything. And I would just sit there for hours and click through them and had a I guess that's where I really got started with music.
So obviously your parents were that influence. And then obviously you got into your own thing when you started having house parties or somebody had house parties anyway, and you were DJing at them. So speak to that kind of first experience where now you're not only a fan of the music and listening to it, but you're actually sitting there, you know, playing it for people and getting the reaction and the vibe that they're giving you back, right?
Yeah, you know, I think it came from, I was an only child, so I was always doing something for attention, and I would have my friends over. Luckily, my parents had a great basement for me to entertain and have people over, but we had, I had a big boom box that mom and dad got me from Philadelphia, just like the old breakdancing boom boxes, and I hooked that up to a couple more speakers, and I'd make mixtapes and have everybody over for, you know, punch, cookies, and music.
So how old were you at this point when you were doing this? Like, how old were you? Were you like in your early teens or?
Early teens. Yep. Yeah. Early teens. And before, we certainly couldn't drive anywhere, and everybody, all the parents were just dropping them off and picking them up.
and you were the entertainment.
I was the entertainment. Yes.
So
or at least I thought I was. I'm not really sure if I was quite the entertainer back then, but at least I was trying to be.
So you leave and you go to Clemson. Now, where were you born?
Yeah. I was born in, we lived all over. My dad was a operations director for M&M Mars. So we moved a lot for his job, but
okay.
By the time I went to Clemson, I had lived in, I was born in Texas. We moved to Iowa, lived in Memphis, Tennessee, lived in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, lived in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and then I went to Clemson after that.
So why did you go to Clemson?
Originally to play soccer. They at the time had the best Division I soccer team in the country, and that's what I was doing.
I knew it had to be sports related because when I think of Clemson, I think you're either playing football or you're playing baseball or you're playing soccer. You're playing yeah. something if you're going to Clemson.
Yeah. It was a really big soccer school back in the day, and of course we had other sports too, but that was what I was playing full time. So
what did you study when you were at Clemson besides soccer
marketing.
And girls marketing? Okay.
It was soccer and girls were, that was by far one and two. Marketing came second or third or fourth.
So it was somewhere along. And did you graduate from Clemson?
I have 5 years. I think I'm still seven classes short, so almost I've been a senior for a long time.
Well, it's nice because now when you meet people, I go to Clemson. I'm still in school. I'm still learning. So you're at Clemson. You're playing soccer.
Yeah.
Yes. You're trying to take marketing, and you're DJing. I take it because that's where you got the name DJ Scooby, correct? So, talk about your days at Clemson and the music, you know, scene there, what you were part of, and how you got that name.
You know, I had taken a couple of years off Clemson. After my junior year, I went down to I lived in Hilton Head Island for a couple of years, and down there is where I picked up. I actually got the DJ full time for the first time in a club. And I learned how to mix music. And this is before there was a Serato or anything to do it for you. You know, it was all learning by ear. And so I was very lucky. And then I had a good experienced DJ, teach me how to read a crowd, how to, do everything from lighting to sound to mix music. So, after that experience, I took that to Clemson and started playing college frat parties and events there for Clemson. And what was cool is back in the day, you know, not now it seems like there's anybody with a laptop as a DJ. Well, this is back in the day where you're carrying either crates of records or crates of CDs around. And you have to, if you're a club guy, you have to know what you're doing. You have to know the patterns of the music and the counts and the and being able to mix, and I was able to do that. And so that made me kind of a rarity because at the time people were just mixing with CD players and fading in and out, and you're either a scratch guy from the Northeast. So I was really lucky and was able to do a lot of gigs that a lot of other guys couldn't get into because of my experience in the clubs.
You know, when I was younger, because I thought I was a DJ, the family would hire me to, you know, do a wedding. I'd bring the CDs. You know what I'm talking about. You play one song. You just said it. You'd fade out. You get to the next song. Someone would say, hey, I want to hear Elvis. You'd play Elvis. And all of a sudden you were a DJ. So what were you working on? You had turntables at the time? Like, I mean, take us through visually, like your setup, because this was probably in the late 50s and early 60s, I'm sure. That's a joke. Anyway, when you were setting up, like what did you have? A couple turntables? Like, what was your gear like?
I did have turntables. What I took mostly to the to all my mobile gigs, or really any of the parties I had, they were a pair of Denon CD. They weren't even turntables back then. They're just Denon mixable CD players. So you had like a Denon controller that could pitch your CDs. I think it was plus or minus 8%, just like turntables at the time. So you could speed them up and slow it down. There weren't any, you know, cue pads or anything like that. It was just straight, just like turntables, basically. It just made it a little easier to carry around. But the premise was the same. The mixing was very similar, because at the time I hadn't learned to scratch yet. So I was still just learning the nuances of more like a house DJ and coming in at the drops or in at the counts, or, you know, versus just a freestyle guy.
I did not know.
It was very effective.
I did not know. Get this. And I'm dead serious. Somebody in the last year gave me a scratch pad. Okay. I didn't know what it was called. It was just this, it was like a felt piece that went on my turntable. And I thought it was to keep it clean. That's what I thought, until somebody said, no, that's when they used to scratch records. They used to do it. And I was like, oh, I'm talking like this is in the last 12 months of my life. So it shows you how little I know. So you're learning on the job, if you will. Did you, I guess at the time, there probably wasn't anywhere online you'd go to learn. So how else would you learn to become better at your craft?
You experience, just straight up. Like I said, I was really lucky, because I went from zero club experience to playing four nights a week or five nights a week at a pretty much a party bar. But again, I had somebody kind of instructing me on what to do. And with club DJing, even today, it's all about getting in there and understanding. I mean, for anybody to put together a 4-hour set or a 3 to 5 hour club set, you got to know what the hell you're doing. And that's, that rings true today. I know a lot of DJs that are fantastic. Technically, they scratch all day long and play four and turntables, but you know, to hear them in the club, it's like, the technical side's there, but to understand how the music energy affects an entire night is a whole different story. And that was something that I consistently worked on, is understanding what music went with what at what time and why it worked. And that was my studying. There wasn't a YouTube or, right, you know, no podcast like yours to listen to. There was nothing. So you just had to get it through straight out experience.
Now, you're DJing clubs as in what? Because when I think of clubs now, I think of, you know, Vegas clubs or those type of nightclubs. What was the club like when you started? It probably wasn't, I assume, like that.
No. The first club I was in, it looked like
it was a church hall.
God, I think the ceilings were like maybe 9 feet tall. You know, it was the girls would dance on the bar, and it was like a college party bar that people come down for spring break and Hilton Head, and it looked like a demilitarized zone, but it certainly had fun. There were big stacks of PV speakers on either side of this 6-inch stage with mirrors behind it. The big, the big lighting effect was either a strobe light or a helicopter, and I controlled those with lighting switches.
Nice. Now, you're in South Carolina, and is this where you started, quote, your official DJ and production business? I know you mentioned that you know, your parents helped you with that. Is that where it all kind of began?
Yes, that's where it began.
So how long are you in South Carolina?
Oh, gosh, let's see. Probably overall 10 years, 8 years.
Okay, so you've got a fair amount of experience at this point, would you say?
Yes.
And is that where you... Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, when I started playing these gigs both at Clemson, I was still traveling back down to Hilton Head to play. So I was doing also corporate events. I'd started doing some regional stuff. So I was on the road a good bit. Even when I went back to finish school, I was still doing quite a few parties all over the Southeast.
So you decide to go to Las Vegas. And you know, that's an interesting move, because it's kind of like, you know, that musician, right, going to Los Angeles or New York and saying, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to be in the right place to do this. And there's no better place than Las Vegas, let's face it. So you get to Las Vegas. What is that like for you? You move there right away, do you? And how do you start getting gigs, knowing that you're probably in the hardest market to get a gig DJing right now?
You know, it's a great question, because I came to Vegas in 2005, and I at the time I was touring with I was on a restaurant. There is a restaurant bar called Wild Wing Cafe, and I was their DJ, and I was touring. They had, I don't know, 15 or 20 places throughout the Southeast, and I was killing it in South Carolina, absolutely just crushing it. As far as the DJ goes, I was probably, this is before the DJs you see today. And I venture to say that I was doing as well as anybody in the Southeast. So to come out to Vegas was certainly a big step. I had sent a lot of promo packets. I had my DVD, my website, and I had sent a lot of those out. So I had some corporate work when I moved out here. I got a couple of bar gigs, which were really cool right off the bat. But it was a whole different deal back in the mid, you know, 2000s, because the DJs that you know today, when you hear DJ, you know, you think Steve Aoki or Calvin Harris or Avicii, rest in peace. You know, you think of some really big guys that have done some work production wise and performance wise and big festivals, and that wasn't around yet. So it was the time, the mid 2000s was certainly a unique time in Vegas. You had the club guys, and you had the guys doing the events and maybe some of the lower lounges and stuff, which is kind of where I entered at.
Right. So you, did you find, like, I know me being a musician, if I play in Southern Niagara and I go, you know what, I'm down here in Canada and I'm killing it. And then I moved to New York or I moved to LA and I think, holy shit, I was pretty good in, you know, Southern Ontario, but I don't know that I'm that great here in LA, because obviously the competition level is much different. Did you feel that at all? Or did you feel like, you know what, I'm right at home here? Or was it like a bit intimidating when you got there?
Oh, 100%. No, 100%. I was, this place intimidated the crap out of me. I'd go into clubs and go, gosh, you know, I don't know if I could ever do that. even though back where I was from, it was like, oh, wow, you know, hey, Scooby's coming. Oh, it's going to kill it, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely intimidated. Especially even back then, there was, I'm trying to think of the clubs. It was like Raw over at the Luxor. There was Rum Jungle at Mandalay Bay. Light, I don't think it even opened yet. Pure had just opened. So the mega clubs had just started to come about at that time. But when I came out here, no, I certainly felt intimidated and didn't know. I certainly questioned my abilities. Matter of fact, questioned it so much, I was auditioning a couple places and I was also bartending on the side to make money. And I decided to take off with the bar career for a while and get out of the DJ business, because I think if I were to look back on it, Shane, it would be because I didn't think at the time that I was good enough. So I even got out of the business for a little bit.
I meant to address this earlier when I mentioned Clemson and your name, DJ Scooby. So before we go on, I just want to clarify where that came from exactly.
Well, the first bar I worked at was it was all guys. It was just, you know, we're all in our early 20s and having fun, and called ourselves, or they called themselves the Dog Pound. And I think they needed a guy in the booth with a dog name. So we were drinking some shots a lot one night, and I thought maybe there'd been some smoke involved, not really sure. And Scooby came up and it just stuck. And it carried with me everywhere I went for the rest of my life.
So you can blame liquor like you can for everything else in this world. Yeah.
I think there were some other things, but yeah, we'll blame liquor. That's a good one.
So you leave, you know, DJing, you're a bartender, you get back into DJing, and then, so yes. What's that like? So how come when you got back into it, obviously, and you're still doing it now, what changed?
Oh man. The sense of entitlement, that I used to have, the just like, oh, well, you know, there was always some excuse why I wasn't getting a gig, or if I got let go of something, oh, so-and-so is this, or so-and-so is this. I'd say entitlement, and the fact that I just didn't really appreciate anything, I think, because I just thought I was, maybe it was coming from, you know, a place where I was revered as a DJ, and then to come into a place, and then it was everybody else's fault that I wasn't a big deal. And I had a lot of things happen in my life. I basically lost my ass and got down to the felt, you know, and started to really look at how my life was transpiring and what had brought joy to my life and what inspired me. And I went back after I'd been away for 4 or 5 years and realized that what an amazing thing I had, and what a gift it was to be able to entertain people as a DJ or an MC, and how amazing the money is for the amount of time we work. It's like, wow, you know, there's doctors and lawyers that don't make that sometimes. And I took a look at my life and said, what the hell am I doing? Why am I even doing anything else? So I started the road back into to DJing.
Now, was there
now I'm,
you know, you mentioned, yeah. Well, you mentioned money, but was there a huge difference between the money you would make in South Carolina compared to Vegas? Like, I would assume yes, but I don't know.
You know what? That's funny. It was actually a big pay cut coming out to Vegas, because there was more competition and there's so many different tiers out here. Your pay back there, again, I was about the only one. I was also doing a lot of production with my shows and bringing all that along. So I was making, for the early 2000s, man, I was killing it. And then coming out here, you know, you're working for a couple to get in, it's $200 or $300 a night, you know, versus $600 to $1,000. And it was a big deal coming out here. Again, I think it's because there's just so many levels out here with which to go. And if you're starting at the bottom, you're starting right at the bottom.
What makes a good DJ to you? And I don't mean what makes you a good DJ, but like if you go to a club, I'm sure you go to clubs where there's other DJs. What stands out and you say, you know what, this makes this guy or this woman a great DJ?
Well, you know, I've mentored a couple of my guys over the years and taught them, brought them from zero to full-time DJ. And one of the first things I tell them is like, listen, man, it's not about the technicality. It's not about the mix. It's about them playing the right tune at the right time of the night. Understanding who you're playing to. You might have this big crush on some hot EDM track and you're playing to a country crowd. Or you might right. love country music, but you're playing to a rock crowd. And so if you don't know your crowd and understanding, and if you don't know your crowd and understand the energy of music and how it affects people, you're probably not going to make it a very long way. And I think if you ask me the thing that stands out, it is truly understanding the music or the energy in the music and how it affects your crowd you're playing to that night.
So what I'm hearing is it's really in that room at that moment about the vibe, because things are always about vibes in clubs.
100%.
There's different yep. types of DJing, and I know nothing, yep. but I'm just, from what I've read and am reading on your site here. So there's house music. I don't even know what trap music is. To retro, to EDM. I guess my question is, what type of music do you like? I have to play golf tomorrow. I'm going to be in the sand trap. That's the only traps I know.
Right.
What's the difference in some of those, and what do you deliver on all of those, or do you play a specific type?
You know, that is a fantastic question. There have been more since DJing has come to light in the last 10 years, and the big guys have got really big. There's been more. I can't even keep track with all the differentiation, all the titles of music now, man. I no idea about some of them. I'm like tropical house, trap, slash, you know, whatever. It's like, wow. I'm an open format guy. So I spin. What that means is I'm as open probably as anybody. In other words, I can go in and play a rock set.
Right.
And I can play a housey set, and I can play an EDM set, and I can play a poppy top 40 remix set, or I can put them all together. I can play some, you know, I can play hip hop or pop hop, or I can play. I'm comfortable with all of those genres. Now, am I comfortable with every genre? No, not at all. I think it's the one thing that ties my music together is I focus on the energy and the music. So, a track might be super hot. It might be number one on the chart, but if it doesn't have the right energy that matches the vibe I'm trying to put out, I won't play it. And some of the slower, like hip hop tracks, you know, they might be number one for 10 weeks or whatever, but it just, there's no energy in the music. So
right.
I just won't play them.
I want to ask you, cause I've taken up a lot of your time already. So I want to kind of, copyrights in music. Okay. So you're a DJ, and can you sell your mixes? Like, because you're using other people's music, but you're kind of altering it. So like, how does that work for copyright?
You can place it on, you know, when I pay like the licensing fees and everything to play live. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the places, luckily around here, they already carry that. They pay the big companies, the licenses so that they can play both recorded and live music. And you know, being in the live music industry, I know you know that. As far as the selling the mixes, you have to have a special, I believe you, I've never tried to sell them. I can post them, and they're like on Mixcloud.
Right. And that's okay.
They allow you to do that. Yeah. As far as selling them, I've never tried to sell it, and I'm not sure that the process to go through to do that
is easy.
Yeah, I would imagine it certainly is not.
Yeah,
because you're certainly, especially, you know, a lot of these guys, they spin so many different genres. I'm not sure exactly what you'd be paying for.
When we were at the Savvy Networker, we were talking about how people get gigs, right? And we were talking about names like Gig Salad and stuff like that. So as a DJ in Vegas and you live there, where do you get most of your gigs besides, I guess, repeat business from clubs that you already work at? But if I'm a DJ listening to this podcast, I want to maybe say, hey, how do I get into some of these bigger name clubs or events? You do a lot of corporate events. So how do you get your gigs?
You know, the sites have helped out tremendously. And like you said, Gig Salad, I'm on Gig Master. And as you go along with those sites, you gain a higher ranking. So that has certainly helped. I'm right on Gig Master. If you plug in event DJ, number one event DJ in Las Vegas, it's me. Luckily, you know, Gig Master's put me up there. So that's a big platform. It's a big selling point, but it's a lot of reviews right now to get the corporate work. You know, you have to get you have to do your work, and you have to get your reviews, and you have to post reviews, and you have to have a site, and you have to keep your site current, and you have to keep your social media current, and all that good stuff. And that's how you get the corporate work and the private events. Now for the club gigs, you know, that's a whole different path. That's having some produced tracks and having a following, and then auditions and getting in there and playing not even an opening set, the set between 9 and 11 before the opener even starts, and letting the club promoter hear you, you know, that's a whole different track. You can have 1,000 reviews and you can go into a club and that might not mean anything. So, you know,
go ahead.
That's just two different ways to approach the different, I'd say, avenues of DJing out here in Las Vegas, because there's a lot.
I'm sure you learned a ton about social networking and about using social at the Savvy Network. And by the way, this show is not sponsored by the Savvy Networker, but it just happens that that's where we were chatting about this. But how much time do you spend on social media? I mean, you spend all this time DJing, you spend, you know, a lot of late nights, but how much do you put into your website and all of your socials? And I mean, that's a full-time job in itself.
It is. And I tell you what, after going to your workshop, it was very eye-opening. And I'm not saying that just because it's yours. It was really, I was like, oh, wow, gosh, I never thought about that. Or I never realized that little thing had so much of an impact. So I've certainly tried to do a little bit more. I'm nowhere near what I need to be social media wise. Now, I'm very proud of my website. I'm very proud of the work I do on my booking sites, which is for my work, for the corporate work, for the private parties, for the suite parties I play here in Vegas. You know, I put a lot of time into those sites because they're direct booking. Whereas the social media, I haven't gotten to that level where I need to be yet, for sure. But I'd say on a week, you know, probably 6 hours or so, maybe 6 to 8 hours every week on something, trying to improve how I'm perceived socially.
Well, you know what? I mean, I look at your website. You got a great website, like you said, and it's actually Sarah Gretzinger's event, not mine. I was just there, but. hopefully you did learn something in it. That's good to hear.
Yes.
A couple other things just before you go. So
sure.
I wanted to know, you read a lot of probably great things about your DJing, right? Like people give you these reviews and you're like, yes. What is the worst thing that you've read that someone has written about you? And maybe it's nothing. I don't know.
I had all my reviews. This is going to sound funny. All my reviews are 5-star except for one, and it was 4-star
from your mother.
It was right. It was no. It was, I was doing a gig at an aquarium. I had set up for a corporate event in Charleston, South Carolina, and the acoustics, they had set me up literally right in front of this fish tank, like this massive tank. And so there was no other way to go. The sound was, I had two speakers probably about 15 feet away from this massive, I don't know, million gallon tank. Right. And it really just didn't sound that great. And there's nothing I could do. And so she wrote, she's like, well, the acoustics, you know, we liked Scooby. He was okay. He was good. But you know, the acoustics certainly could have been better, and it was muffled. And I was like, oh, damn. Because I take, especially coming from the doing all the production and stuff, I take a lot of pride in how my work looks and sounds and feels. And man, I was devastated. I was like, damn, 4 stars? What in the hell?
What are some of your favorite venues to DJ in Vegas? You did something at Top Golf, didn't you, recently? Or
yeah.
So
Golf is,
it looks awesome, man.
Yeah, it's so cool. I play. I can't tell you. I played so many suite parties, like these suite parties you see on TV, or some of these suites you see in you know, wherever, on movies. You know, I played in some of those, and those are the coolest, man, because they're just fun. People cut loose, they let go, and they're just greatly. You have a lot of what do you call it? Missing the word. A lot of great decor, a lot of good, like the food and the drinks and the little details they bring into these are really high end clientele.
Right.
those have been the funnest. Top golf is always fun because you're outside, you're overlooking the city. I played on top of roofs. You know, I played on top of the hotel. I played in on top of the link. I played on top of like Platinum. I played on top of just about every roof in Las Vegas that you can play on. And it just makes such an amazing backdrop. So, you know, you're playing these outdoor places and the weather's beautiful.
Bright lights, beautiful city, yeah.
Oh, man, yeah, just awesome.
Where do you hang?
Almost every place. Go ahead.
I was going to say, where do you hang out in Vegas? Just, you know, when you're not DJing, do you have a couple of favorite spots you go to, whether it's just to have drinks or food? Or they have a ton of great restaurants, but if I asked you a couple of places that you would go just to hang out.
We're in kind of the Southwest. We're about 15 minutes from the Strip. Vegas is broken up. Kind of, you have your Summerlin area, Henderson area. So there's a lot of great local spots. I am not like a lot of Las Vegas locals are like, oh, we stay away from the Strip. I don't. I love the Strip. If I'm going out for a burger or beer or something, I want to go watch some sports. I'm going to Tap at MGM.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That's a sports bar they just put in there. Is that one?
Tap is actually, yeah, it's a pub / sports bar, but they have a lot of great events there.
Right. Okay. And it's a massive, I remember, big place. They used to have the Lions were there, the Tigers, whatever the hell they were. Is that not where it is? And then they got rid of them and put in this sports bar.
They put in, that might be, I think you're right.
You come down the escalator anyway.
It's in back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a good size and that's always a good spot. We like, there's some places in downtown Summerlin, hang out a lot. There's like some of the local spots there. There's so many great places for brunch to check out. I'd say consistently of a local guy for those places than heading the Strip, but. You know, nothing beats like T-Mobile Arena, going to a hockey game at T-Mobile. And
you almost had a Stanley Cup. The Stanley Cup was given out in Las Vegas this year. It's just that you didn't win it. But damn it. I don't even know how you got that far.
I'll tell you what, it was a hell of a year. Hell of a year.
Okay, I'm going to give you a couple of names of DJs. Now, these are just DJs that I would know who they are. And give me a real brief description of them, like really brief of what you think of them or their style, or if you had to, someone said, tell me about this person, real, real brief. Skrillex.
Okay. Oh, man, that's just, he has got such a great, he plays some harder. It's that EDM that's the really, I'm trying to think of the word for it. He's got some dubstep and just some harder house or some harder music that's it's got a lot of pump to it. I don't play that because it's just the crowds I play to.
Yeah.
I play some of his more commercial stuff that he's done with other artists. But, he's fantastic.
How about Deadmau5? Just because he's from close to my hometown here and he's done very well.
Oh, man, isn't he fun? I like watching him. I haven't ever seen him live. All I've ever seen is the stuff on YouTube. I would love to see him live sometime. I need to make that a point. But, geez, how can you not move to his stuff? I mean, it's just he has got such a fantastic sound for everything he plays. And I love his music. Love him.
And finally, you brought this name up to me when we were in Vegas together, and I kind of went on YouTube and listened a little bit. Marshmello.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Like Deadmau5, man. You gotta love the head. You gotta love the headgear.
Yeah. You need Scooby headgear. I don't know what it looked like yet, but maybe dog ears. I don't know. You need to get something.
I don't know if I could DJ with it. I don't even know how those guys do, but Marshmello seemed to. I know he's been working on it for a long time, but I guess the first time I heard Marshmello was 3 years ago. 3 years ago, another good I think of, when I think Marshmallow, I think of just live, big live crowds that he's played to, and the his tracks just, they seem to stick with you. Like the Alone, I think I wake up hearing that in my head five times a week, or I'll hear a song that reminds me of it, and it's like, dun, dun, dun. Like, damn you.
But that's branding, right? Like you know it by that. Oh. That's what you think of. And you know, there's so many things I'd love to chat with you more about, and maybe we'll do it again. We didn't get to this, but just even about, you know, how to create your own unique brand, because there's so many people out there doing this, but we'll chat another time. I know we've been doing this for a while now. How can people reach you, or what's the best place for them to check you out? Plug your website or any of your socials.
Sure. It's best way to find me is really it's djscoobie.com. It's djscoobie.com. You can find me or follow me on Instagram at DJ_Scoobie. That's DJ_SCOOBIE. And probably that's the best way to reach me. Scoobie@DJScoobie.com.
You're the man. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it.
Hey, man. Shane, it was awesome, brother. Always a privilege and pleasure to talk to you, my friend. And I love what you do. I love following you on social media. And I can't wait for your to come back here to Vegas.
Sarah says I'm a disaster on social media.
I like it.
See, can you write a review? Can you write a review to her? And can you tell her how much you enjoy following my social media, please?
I mean, it looks like a lot of fun to me. You have some great posts. I'm like, oh, that looks cool. Yeah.
Oh, man. This is the Music Inspired Media Podcast. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. Visit Shane on Facebook at Shane C. Neal Media Personality. On Instagram at ShaneCNeal.com.